And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's April the 4th, 94th day of the year. 271 days remain till the year's over with. And on the Roman calendar, this was known as the day before the nones of April. Now, keep in mind, a lot of water has come under the bridge since the Romans ran things, though it was more ordered than we have right now. There's a lot going on. Our illustrious leader wants to just throw open the southern border and say, come on down. And my liberal wife, if given her free rein, we'd be living in a tent in the backyard while she put all the refugees she could in the house. Our elected congresswoman, her office has told me that they're sort of more concerned with undocumented immigrants and their needs than they are disabled veterans and their needs, which I have a serious issue with. But unfortunately, we seem to have the inmates running the asylum at the moment. Hopefully that will be a little better after the midterms. The problem is certain people are considered sacred. Apparently here, if you're a Democratic congressperson, you can do no wrong. No matter how stupid you act and talk. Well, on this day of 503 BC, Roman consul Agrippa Menenius Lanatus celebrated triumph for a military victory over the Sabines. That's where we got the Sabine women in those stories. 1268, a five-year Byzantine-Venetian peace treaty is concluded between Venetian envoys and Emperor Michael VIII, Palaiologus. 1423, death of the Venetian Doge Tommaso Mocenigo, whose rule victories were achieved against the Kingdom of Hungary and against the Ottoman Empire at the Battle of Gallipoli in 1416. But unfortunately, all things must end, and he died. In 1581, Francis Drake is knighted by Queen Elizabeth I for completing a circumnavigation of the world. 1609, Moriscos are expelled from the Kingdom of Valencia. Now, the Moriscos, for those who are not familiar with them, were former Muslims and their descendants whom the Roman Catholic Church and the Spanish Crown commanded to convert to Christianity or face compulsory exile after Spain outlawed the open practice of Islam by its Muslim population in the early 16th century. At one point, the Muslims control the Iberian Peninsula. 1660, Declaration of Breda by King Charles II of Great Britain promises, among other things, a general pardon to all royalists for crimes committed during the Civil War and the Interregnum. 1796, just got an email. What's the Interregnum? That's the between reign in Latin, the period between the execution of Charles I on January 30, 1649, and the arrival of Charles II in London, May 29, 1660, which marked the start of the Restoration. During the interregnum, England was under various forms of republican government, and everything basically went to hell in a handbasket. Somebody's always got a better idea, no matter what's going on. 1796, Georges Cuvier delivers the first paleontological lecture. 1814, Napoleon abdicates for the first time and names his son Napoleon II as Emperor of the French. 1818, U.S. Congress, affirming the Second Continental Congress, adopts the flag of the U.S. with 13 red stripes and white stripes and one star for each state. There were 20 at that point in time. 1841, William Henry Harrison dies of pneumonia, becoming the first president of the U.S. to die in office and setting the record for the briefest administration. Vice President Tyler succeeds Harrison as president. If I'm not mistaken, he was an American military officer and politician. He was the ninth president. Died 31 days after his inauguration in 1841. There was a brief constitutional crisis that resulted as presidential succession had been fully defined in the Constitution. And Harrison was the last president born as a British subject in the 13 colonies and was the paternal grandfather of Benjamin Harrison, 23rd president of the U.S. He had been secretary of the Northwest Territory. Just 3 weeks after he was inaugurated, he fell ill and died just a few days later. After resolution of the ambiguity in the Constitution regarding succession, Tyler became president. And at 68, Harrison was the oldest person to assume the presidency until Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980 at 69, and now we got one at 79 going on 100. And I got nothing against him, except for the fact that he firmly believes in opening mouth and inserting foot. And we pay the penalty. 1865, American Civil War. Day after Union forces capture Richmond, President Lincoln visits the Confederate capital. 1866, Alexander II of Russia nearly escapes an assassination attempt by Dmitry Kolokozov in the city of St. Petersburg. Now, there was a lot of effort put into assassinating various czars. But no matter how bad the czar was, what was done by the Bolsheviks was far worse. 1887, Argonia, Kansas elects Susanna Salters, the first female mayor in the U.S., 1905, an Indian earthquake hits the Kangra Valley, killing 20,000. Destroys most buildings in Kangra, McLeod Ganj, and Dharmashala. 1913, First Balkan War. Greek aviator Emanuel Argyropoulos becomes the first pilot to die in the Hellenic Air Force when his plane crashes. 1925, the Schutzstaffel, the SS, founded under Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party of Germany on this date in 1925. 1933, the U.S. Navy airship USS Akron is wrecked off the New Jersey coast due to severe weather. That was a blimp, by the way, folks. 1944, World War II. First bombardment of oil refineries in Bucharest by Anglo-American forces killed 3,000 civilians. 1945, World War II. U.S. Army troops liberate Ordorf forced labor camp in Germany. Also in 45, World War II, U.S. Army troops capture Cassel. And finally, 1945, World War II, Soviet Red Army troops liberate Hungary from German occupation and occupy the country themselves. In 1949, Cold War, 12 nations signed the North Atlantic Treaty, creating the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. 1958, CND peace symbols displayed in public for the first time in London. 1960, France agrees to grant independence to the Mali Federation. That's a union of Senegal and French Sudan. 1964, the Beatles occupy the top five positions on the Billboard Hot 100 pop chart. 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. delivers his Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence speech in New York City's Riverside Church. On this day in 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. is assassinated by James Earl Ray at a motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, James Earl Ray was described as a two-bit hood, and yet he managed to go on to run internationally. There's a lot of questions. My step-uncle knew him, because he did a lot of work at the prison where Ray was being incarcerated. And even the Kings began to believe that he hadn't gotten a fair trial and that he actually wasn't the one to pull the trigger. 1968, Apollo program. NASA launches Apollo 6. 1969, Dr. Denton Cooley implants the first temporary artificial heart. 1973, the Twin Towers at the World Trade Center in New York City are officially dedicated. Also in 73, a Lockheed C-141 Starlifter dubbed the Hanoi Taxi makes the last flight of Operation Homecoming. 1975, Microsoft is founded as a partnership between Bill Gates and Paul Allen in Albuquerque, New Mexico. They would have made their headquarters there, but he got picked up, Bill Gates. I think he ran a stop sign, and the officers said, "We don't want your kind in this town." So as a result, Microsoft was moved. 1975, Vietnam War, U.S. Air Force Lockheed C-5A Galaxy, transporting orphans, crashes near Saigon, South Vietnam, shortly after takeoff. 172 people were killed. 1979, Prime Minister Zulfikar Ali Bhutto of Pakistan is executed. 1981, Iran-Iraq War. Islamic Republic of Iran Air Force mounts an attack on a H-3 airbase and destroys about 50 Iraqi aircraft. 1983, Space Shuttle Program. Challenger makes its maiden voyage into space. 1984, President Reagan calls for an international ban on chemical weapons. 1988, Governor Evan Meacham of Arizona is convicted in his impeachment trial and removed from office. 1990, the current flag of Hong Kong is adopted for folks colonial Hong Kong during the third session of the 7th National People's Congress. When they put people in the name, you know that it's being dominated by communists. 1991, Senator John Hines of Pennsylvania and six others are killed when a helicopter collides with their airplane over an elementary school in Marion, Pennsylvania. 1991, 41 people taken hostage inside a Good Guys electronics store in Sacramento, California. Three of the hostage takers and three hostages are killed. 1994, three people are killed when KLM City Hopper Flight 433 crashes at Amsterdam Airport, Schiphol. 1996, Comet Hyakutake is imaged by the USA asteroid orbiter near Earth asteroid rendezvous. 2002, the MPLA government of Angolan UNITA rebels signed a peace treaty ending the Angolan Civil War. 2009, France announces its return to full participation of its military forces in NATO. 2010, a magnitude 7.2 earthquake hits south of the Mexican-U.S. border, kills two and damages buildings across the two countries. 2013, more than 70 are killed in a building collapse in Thane, India. 2017, Syria conducts an airstrike on Khan Shaykhun using chemical weapons, kills 89 civilians. And in 2020, China holds a National Day of Mourning for martyrs who died in the fight against the novel coronavirus disease outbreak. I wouldn't call them martyrs, especially if they're part of the team that developed this. Alrighty. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays, observances. Children's Day in Hong Kong and Taiwan. Christian Feast Day, Benedict the Moor. Gaetano Cattanoso, Isidore Seville, Martin Luther King Jr. in the Episcopal Church in the U.S. Reginald Heber in the Anglican Church of Canada. Tigernach of Clonis, Independence Day, celebration of independence of Senegal from France in 1960. In Angola, it's Peace Day. And it's one of the possible days for the Kuomintang Festival. Let's see what else we got. 1081, Alexis I Comnenus occupies the Byzantine throne. 1460, University of Basel in Switzerland is formed. 1541, Ignatius of Loyola becomes the first superior general of the Jesuits. 1552, Mauritius van Saxen begins the alliance with Karel and Akita Stroganov. 1558, Ivan IV, Tsar of all the Russias, also known as Ivan the Terrible, gives parts of North Russia to fur traders. 1588, Christian IV succeeds Frederick II as King of Denmark. 1655, the battle at Postage Farina in Tunis. English fleet beats the Barbary pirates. 1655, the miraculous statue entitled the Infant of Prague is solemnly crowned by the command of Cardinal Harrach. 1686, English King James II publishes the Declaration of Indulgence. In 1687, King James II ordered his Declaration of Indulgence read in all English churches. 1737, Anthony van Heim installed as a Dutch pension advisor. 1789, the first U.S. Congress begins regular sessions during George Washington's presidency at Frederick Hall in New York City. That lasts until 1791. 1794, the Battle of Lakowitz, part of the Polish-Lithuanian uprising led by Tadeusz Kościuszko. It was a tactical Polish victory. 1828, Casparus van Woudin patents chocolate milk powder in Amsterdam. 1833, Saint-Étienne-Lyon Railway fully opens in France. 1850, on this date, the city of Los Angeles is incorporated. 1859, Bryant's Minstrels debuts the song Dixie in New York City in the finale of a blackface minstrel show. Blackface minstrel shows used to be quite the rage. 1862, the Siege of Yorktown, fought in York County, Newport News, Virginia, begins. It has an inconclusive result. It was known as the Yorktown Campaign, and it was fought during the American Civil War. Also in 1862 was the Peninsula Campaign, launched in southeastern Virginia. It was supposed to capture Richmond during the U.S. War, the U.S. Civil War, and it was a Confederate victory. Robert E. Lee was... I think it was Hooker or McClellan commanding the other side. 1864, skirmish at Elkins Ford in the little Missouri River in Arkansas. 1865, on this date, Robert E. Lee's Confederate Army arrives at Amelia Courthouse in Amelia County, Virginia. 1870, Golden Gate Park is formed by City Order Number 800. 1896 was the announcement of gold being discovered in the Yukon. Assassination attempt on the Prince of Wales, who later became King Edward VII, took place on this date when he was shot by Jean-Baptiste Cipado, who was protesting the Boer War. 1900, British garrison at Redersburg surrenders to Boer General DeWitt. 1902, British businessman and imperialist politician Cecil Rhodes formed the Rhodes Scholarship Fund with a $10 million donation. 1911, Hugh Chalmers automaker suggested the idea of creating a Most Valuable Player award in baseball. 1912, Russian army fires on striking mine workers at Lena gold fields in Siberia. 1912, the Chinese Republic is proclaimed in Tibet. 1914, the film serial The Perils of Pauline shown for the first time in Los Angeles. 1915, Germany protests vigorously to the U.S., claiming it has to insist the British lift its blockade of Germany and assert American neutrality. 2 years later, 1917, U.S. Senate agrees 82-6 to participate in World War I. 1918, it was a food riot in Amsterdam. This day in 1920, Arabs attack Jews in Jerusalem. 1926, Greek dictator Theodoros Pangalos elected president. 1930, the Communist Party of Panama is founded. 1932, Charles King, University of Pittsburgh, isolates vitamin C using adrenal samples provided by Hungarian Albert Szent Györgyi. 1939, Faisal II ascends the throne of Iraq. 1941, German troops conquer Benghazi in Libya. 1944, British troops capture Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. 1944, French General Charles de Gaulle formed a new regime in exile. He collaborated with the communists to do it, which made him a lot of enemies. 1944, Allied Bucharest bombings targeting railroads kills 5,000. 1945, World War II, U.S. Army occupies Bielefeld in northeastern Germany. 1949, Israel and Jordan sign an armistice agreement. 1955, the British government signed a military treaty with Iraq. 1958 on this date, Cheryl Crane, who was 14 at the time, daughter of actress Lana Turner, allegedly stabbed to death organized crime figure Johnny Stampinato. That was her mother's boyfriend. She claimed self-defense. Courts later held it to be a justifiable homicide. The question has long remained, did the girl kill him or did her mother kill him? And the girl took the blame. Lana Turner, of course, was a major actress in Hollywood. And it wouldn't have done her career any good to be tried for the murder of an organized crime figure. All right. I think we have pretty much exhausted our little history segment for today. So what we're going to do is go back to talking about bizarre things. Maybe. All right, we're going to be talking some more about conspiracy theories. Now, Plato said he got the story of Atlantis from an ancestor. Critias, who was in one of the dialogues written about him, he was the principal speaker in the dialogue, gave a history of the Atlantean civilization and said it was the perfect society. According to him, the tales are handed down through his ancestor, Solon, who was a statesman and poet who traveled extensively. According to the story, Egyptian priest in the Nile Delta city of Sais taught Solon that there was once a place even older in history than Egypt, which the Greeks accepted as being centuries older than their own culture. And according to the Egyptian priest, Atlantis, a great island continent that flourished about 8,000 years before and was situated beyond the Pillars of Hercules, that was the Strait of Gibraltar, Pillars of Hercules was the Greek designation for the cliffs that formed the Strait of Gibraltar. Beyond the strait is the Atlantic Ocean, of course, and the main metropolis of this wonderful kingdom was known as Atlantis. Situated amid a series of concentric rings and alternated between strips of land and water. The water rings acted as trade routes and contributed to forming a set of natural barriers that made Atlantis extremely difficult to invade. And although Atlantis was said to possess a large force of professional soldiers, the culture encouraged them to study, which resulted in improvements in engineering and science that made the continent very powerful. A network of bridges and tunnels connected to land circles and intelligent exploitation of natural resources brought security and plenty for everybody who lived on the island. Many trees gave peace and beauty, and racetracks were utilized for sporting tournaments, and irrigation systems maintained abundant crops. Now, according to Plato, what led to Atlantis' downfall was the fact the inhabitants grew corrupt and greedy. They put personal interest above the greater good. To gain global dominance, they started invading neighboring countries. Now, Poseidon, the sea god, was enraged by these developments and destroyed the civilization, hammering the continent with earthquakes and floods until the ocean swallowed the entire civilization up. Now, some have related the widespread narrative of Atlantis' demise to other apocalyptic occurrences, such as legends of a vast deluge in the Bible, the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the flood myths that were discussed by other nations. Now, in addition, some argued the ends of the Ice Age between 12,000 and 10,000 BC led to global water increases and earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and temperature changes that were either accidental or related to the Ice Age. Now, in December 2001, explorers using a miniature submarine to probe the seafloor off the coast of Cuba announced the discovery of stone structures deep beneath the ocean surface that were suggestive of ruins left by unknown civilizations thousands of years ago, which, of course, excited the fans of the Lost Continent theory. According to representatives of the Canadian-based Advanced Digital Communications, and scientists from the Cuban Academy of Sciences, the buildings were spread as if they were relics of an urban area at a depth of about 2,100 feet. And this ancient metropolis was estimated to be over 6,000 years old, which would date it to about 1,500 years before Egypt's Giza pyramids. Now, whether this discovery is related to Atlantis or evidence of a land bridge that formerly connected Cuba to the mainland South America is still being argued. Now, there's a lot of evidence supporting the fact there was a very advanced civilization that existed before our current civilization. And certainly it is not beyond the realm of possibility that Atlantis actually did exist. But even after all the arguments and back and forth and nothing is proven. Now, for many in the Christian faith, the greatest of all conspiracies are said to be those perpetrated by the Antichrist against the disciples of the resurrected Christ. Now, the term Antichrist is generally thought to be connected with Revelation's apocalyptic New Testament. But it doesn't appear in that text. The epistle writer claims in John 1 chapter 2 verse 18 that the enemy of Christ has appeared and that many false professors have entered the Christian ranks. In verse 22, John identified anybody who denies Jesus as the Christ, the Father, and the Son as the Antichrist. And in 2 John verse 7, he claims there are many deceivers currently in action among the believers. Now, in the book of Matthew, chapter 24, verses 3 through 44, Jesus goes into considerable detail with his followers regarding false messiahs and prophets who would fool many people with stories about the end of the world. He refers to the prophet Daniel and his warnings about the end times, and he warns the disciples not to follow false prophets. Of course, the issue becomes how to determine who is a false prophet. They don't come with ID cards. Now, teachers who perform amazing miracles and signs to deceive God's chosen ones are said by many to be false prophets. Not one, not even the angels, know when the Son of Man is going to return on the clouds of heaven, according to Jesus. Now, the oldest incarnation of the so-called Antichrist is supposedly the warrior king Gog. He appears in the book of Ezekiel and returns in Revelation with his kingdom of Magog, signifying Satan's earthly henchmen who would assault God's people in the last great fight of good versus evil. And according to Jewish literature, regarding the end of the days, the armies of Gog and Magog will be destroyed and the world will finally be at peace. Now, throughout the Bible, the Antichrist is the son of perdition, the man of sin, the man of lawlessness, the prince of destruction, and also called the beast. He's described in great detail by the prophet Daniel. He'd be a wicked ruler who will exalt and elevate himself above every god and will talk outrageous things against the God of gods. But at his own home estate, he would secretly venerate a deity of forces and a divinity unknown to his forebears. He'll do this in his citadel with a new god whom he shall recognize and magnify. And he'll reign over many and divide the country for gain. Now that's from the book of Daniel, chapter 11. Now this wicked king, the Antichrist, is connected with 10 kings who pledge their authority and loyalty to him to build a short-lived empire of violence and ruin in both Daniel and John, the Revelator's prophecies. According to the scriptures, the 10 horns of this kingdom are 10 kings who shall rise, and another shall rise after him, and he'll be diverse and speak great words against the highest God and wear down the saints of the highest one, and shall think to change times and laws. And he'll rule for 3.5 years, according to the book of Daniel. And although Jesus explicitly states that no one will know the hour or day of his second coming, Christian scholars have consistently viewed the rise of the Antichrist to earthly power as a kind of catalyst that will set in motion Armageddon, the final battle between good and evil. Ultimate clash between Jesus Christ's army and Satan armies. So Christians have been around a millennia. Now, many have endeavored to find the Antichrist among their day's great and brutal leaders, such as Nero and Napoleon and Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin. And the selection of whoever's going to be the Antichrist has often been influenced by political or religious prejudices. Pope's been a favorite of evangelicals for the title since the Protestant Reform. Now, the number 666 is associated with the Antichrist, according to Revelation's chapter 13, which declares the number of the beast is 666, and that this number represents a person. Now, in the book of John, the Revelator's first century reality, the beast that dominated the globe would have been Nero, the Roman Empire's emperor and Caesar. and using the Hebrew alphabet, the numerical value of Caesar Nero, the persecutor of early Christians, was in fact 666. Now, scholars have disclosed on May 1st, 2005, this newly found piece of the early surviving copy of the New Testament, dating from the 3rd century, suggests that subsequent copyists got it wrong. The beast number is actually 616. And according to David Parker, professor of New Testament textual studies and the paleography at the University of Birmingham in England, the number 616 relates to another foe of early Christians, the Emperor Caligula. Or Little Boots, as his military fans called him. And those who believe the number 666 is still the powerful predicator of or predictor of the Antichrist will continue to suggest modern contenders for that position. For example, the numerical value of Franklin D. Roosevelt's name was reputedly 666. And since he did serve as president of the U.S. for 12 years during the Great Depression and World War II, many of his conservative Christian adversaries started to see him as the Antichrist. Even Ronald Reagan, considered by many political experts to be one of our country's most popular presidents, had some critics point out he had six letters in each of his three names, which would equate to 666. The epitaph Antichrist has been used by so many people in popular culture in recent decades, it's kind of lost a lot of its meaning and feeling of threat. But fundamentalist Christians who believe strongly in the coming tribulation, apocalypse, rapture, and the great and final battle of good versus evil, Armageddon, believe that the title of Antichrist retains its fear factor, and we have to pay close attention to the beast signs and warnings as prophesied in the book of Revelation. You know, there have been a lot of discussions about where and how this so-called final battle may come to pass. The fact that it would begin and end in the Middle East is kind of stretched credulity just a little bit. But staying in the same vein of the mysterious others, there is still something going on that has gained a lot of attention, and that's the mutilation of cattle, mysterious mutilation of cattle. According to many folks, extraterrestrials mutilate cattle and remove their tongues and genital parts to get enzymes that they need to allow them to continue to exist on Earth. Now, according to several forensic pathologists who've examined maimed cattle with their tongues and eyes and ears and anuses and udders and genitalia removed without spilling a drop of blood, traditional surgical tools could not and have not been used. And I would also point out that during the Vietnam War, one of our B-52s vanished, and it was said to have crashed in the jungle. And a Special Forces A-team led by Captain Bill English was sent to destroy the classified bomb site and get the identity documents and dog tags of the, assuming there were no survivors, of the crew. And they found the plane in the jungle. It had crashed, but it had come straight down instead of coming in as a plane would normally do at an angle. They had to use C4 and blast the doors, which were still locked. Everybody on board, of course, was dead, but all the crew had their tongues and genital parts removed, just like the mutilated cattle. Now, just forensic pathologists who've examined the victims of these mutilations claim the cuts look to be the product of cutting-edge laser technology. Now, several veterinarians and forensic professionals who've analyzed the strange mutilations that characterize the blood is looking to be contaminated with something. It was drained with no vascular breakdown as a consequence, but unfortunately, technology that could handle such a feat doesn't really exist on Earth, and if it did, it'd be extensive and heavy equipment that would be needed to manage creatures that, in some cases, weigh more than 1,500 pounds. Traces or marks of a traditional type, such as tire imprints or human or animal tracks, never been discovered near one of these mutilated corpses. Nevertheless, numerous farmers and ranchers have claimed indentations of a tripod have been found nearby. In addition, several claims of UFOs or unmarked helicopters have been supposedly seen in the areas where the mutilations take place. Now, in spite of the fact that it's no longer front page news, these animal mutilations seem to be widespread, with the same animals being targeted as victims. According to reports from Argentina in July of 2002, over 200 cattle have been discovered with their blood drained and tongues and organs and flesh and skin removed by angular, precisely curved incisions, starting with the first reported mutilation in April of 2002. Argentine farmers often identified UFO teams as the most probable mutilators of their livestock herds. And many skeptical veterinarians, livestock association officials, forensic pathologists, chemists, and a lot of county, state, and federal officers and agents believe that such mutilations are simply Mother Nature carrying out one of her primary responsibilities, keeping the countryside clean. And according to these investigators, the genuine offenders of the mutilations are predators and scavengers. Now, I've never seen, in many cases, when the mutilated cattle are found, predators and scavengers have gone to great lengths to avoid the bodies that have been mysteriously mutilated. UFO experts dismissed the likelihood predators and scavengers could incise and take certain organs from their victims in such a precise manner. The apparent difficulty of blaming predators and scavengers as the remainder of the animal is still alive, so to speak. Linda Mountain Howe, author of Glimpses of Other Realities, is the most well-known animal mutilation researcher. She wrote her book in 1998. She's recorded hundreds of unusual, unexplainable deaths of animals on the open range, especially cattle and horses, all of which have had bloodless excisions of eyes and organs and genitals. Now, when she started her investigation in the autumn of 1979, she feared pollution in the environment, and that some government agency was surreptitiously taking tissue and fluids for evaluation. But she couldn't understand why any government organization operating in secret would be so responsible as to leave cow corpses lying in fields, which of course caused fear and outrage among the animal's owners. Her first interviews were with ranchers and law enforcement authorities who grudgingly told her about sightings of luminous discs around the mutilations. Some witnesses even reported seeing otherworldly beings at the location. Now, her continuing investigation, it's persuaded her that something very odd is going on, which might entail extraterrestrial experiments on Earth creatures. And according to certain UFO conspiracy theorists, about 1954, a shadow organization inside the U.S. government struck a deal with extraterrestrial intelligence that allowed this animal mutilation and human abductions in return for superior alien technology. The aliens explained the cow mutilations by saying their evolutionary climate rendered their digestion systems defective. As a result, they could best be able to survive on Earth by consuming an enzyme or hormonal secretion most easily acquired from cow tongues and throats. Let's turn our attention to some historical conspiracies that some of them I haven't heard of as much as I've read. Well, De Quincey wrote, "Many a man may trace his downfall to a murder of which perhaps he thought little enough of at the time."
And of course, this is true, but in this particular instance, the comment referred especially to Philip II of Spain. And his secretary, Antonio Perez, Perez's steward, his page, and several professional ruffians. From the king to the scullion, everyone was involved in the assassination of Juan de Escovedo, secretary of Philip's famed natural brother, Don John of Austria. And all of them, to varying degrees, had deep reason to regret an action that seemed to be a routine political occurrence at the time. Even now, political assassination is viewed as an acceptable political move. Now, the mystery in the case of Escovedo is neither the method in which he disappeared nor the identities of his killers. I mean, frankly, everybody knew the identities of those responsible, from the king to the ruffians. But obscurity covers the motivations for the action. Why was Escovedo executed? Did the king have him killed for merely political motives, which were insufficient in the first place, but were inflated by suspicious royal fancy? Or were Philip II's secretary and Spain's monarch competitors for the love of a high-ranking wood-eyed widow? And did the secretary persuade Philip to order Escovedo's killing because Escovedo threatened to divulge their wicked plot to the king? Well, with varying degrees of agreement, Sir William Stirling Maxwell and Mansour Minet accepted his interpretation. Mr. Froude, on the other hand, believed Philip acted for political motives and with the full consent of his ill-informed conscience. And according to some of the investigators, there was no woman as a motivation in the case. Now, a third possibility is that Philip wanted to kill Escovedo for political reasons without regard to the sensitive affection. Now, Philip was hesitant and indecisive about whether to bring to fruition his half-baked plan. Perez, who filled Escovedo's involvement with his love affair, spurred his royal master onto the crime he was avoiding. Now, we may never know the whole truth of the matter. Now, there were certain the conditions of morality and manners in Madrid at that time, which make the blundering tragedies of Holyrood and Queen Mary's time seem like child's play. And Escovedo, the dead man, and Antonio Perez, Shakespeare's first killer, had both been schooled in the service of Ruy Gomez, Philip's famed minister. And Gomez had a wife, A de Mendoza, having been born in 1546, was 32, when Escovedo was assassinated in 1578. Blind in one eye, but both her eyes are undoubtedly bright in 1567 when she seemed to have been Philip's mistress, or she was assumed to be Philip's mistress. Kings had to have a mistress, it was required. 11 years later, at the time of the murder, there was no reason to believe Philip was still susceptible to her charms. Her husband, Prince de Eboli, had died in 1573. The princess was now a widow, and she chose to distinguish her husband's old secretary at that date, the king's secretary, Perez. There seemed to be no reason to suppose Philip would have been bothered by the matter. Now, supposedly, one of the reasons for Escovedo's murder is that he still loved I with an unroyal fidelity. She loved Perez, and she and Perez failed Escovedo to betray him to the king. Now, there were many who believed that Philip had made up his mind, as far as he ever did about anything, to assassinate Escovedo long before that diplomat became an uncomfortable spy on the alleged lovers. And to take things to an even more personal level, Perez was actually believed to be the natural son of his late boss, Gomez, the spouse of his supposed lover. Now, other evidence shows that Perez was most likely the bastard of a man by the name of Perez. His supposed mistress, Gomez's widow, may have even told the tale to establish her ties with Perez. And so she had claimed that they were innocent. They weren't doing anything out of the ordinary. Now, Escovedo and Perez have been friends since they were children. And while Perez moved from Gomez's service to Phillips, Escovedo was appointed secretary to the notably daring Don John of Austria, probably referred to as Don Juan of Austria. The court thought he was supposed to be a spy on Don John, but he succumbed to the charms of that and gladly accepted, if not inspired, the most audacious designs of the winner of Lepanto, the Sword of Christendom. Now, this was a highly uncomfortable situation for Philip, who never took time by the forelock, but instead brooded on projects and passed up opportunities that would have brought him great acclaim. Don John, on the other hand, was off of pressing the game when he was dispatched to tempt and conciliate in the Low Countries and remove the Spanish army of occupation. He planned to transfer the Spaniards out of the Netherlands via water. He'd descend on England once they're on the Blue Sea, rescue the prisoner Mary Stuart, marry her, because he thought she would make a great wife, and reestablish the Catholic faith and assume the English crown. Now, this plan, which was authorized by the Pope, didn't fit with the plans of King Philip. He delayed the plan, and several other conspiracies that were en route. Now, the centerpiece of all these plans, for lack of a better term, was Escovedo. So Philip viewed him as a dangerous person indeed. When Don John first visited the Low Countries, Escovedo was in Madrid. His undertaking at that time was pressing Philip to adopt Don John's ardent suggestions, despite Perez's request to be careful. And in 1576, when this was going on, Perez was actually a good friend of Escovedo's. And in spite of his urgings to Escovedo to stop pressing the king, Escovedo sent an agitated letter to the king, criticized his policies. According to Sir William Sterling, Don Maxwell's John of Austria, the term employed by Escovedo was unstitched. And Philip was becoming more and more agitated about the letters. In any event, Philip was persuaded to ignore the pressing of Escovedo in 1576. My goodness, we got all kinds of strange noises going on here. Well, you know, the bottom line is King Philip was actually afraid of Escovedo. And it's believed that the king urged Perez to kill his friend because the king thought Escovedo was going to kill him. And a mystery such as this will never be solved. Because, let's face it, the people who get to the level of the king and his secretary was at such a level they thought the law was beneath them. Now, Perez had letters from the king urging him to kill Escovedo, apparently, but he never showed them as evidence. Well, bottom line to this whole thing is a murder such as this actually had the ability to change a future that many people saw coming. With the Pope's backing, had France and Spain and Portugal and some of the other Catholic countries turn their might on England and put a Catholic back on the throne, the history of the world as we know it would have been changed forever. Well, the problem is many of those who sat on the thrones of these various countries were not the smartest or the sharpest knife in the drawer. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, they were more concerned about what they wanted than what the Pope wanted. I mean, at one point in time, the Pope, of course, led armies. He could lift his hand and there'd be 100,000 men ready to throw themselves into the cannon's mouth to please the Pope, because that's what God wanted. Well, by 1600, that wasn't quite what it had been. Well, and sometimes the actions of some of these folks have led to many deaths of folks very high up in the food chain, so to speak. I refer, among others, to the conspiracy of Gowrie. Now, the events known as the Gowrie Conspiracy of the Slaying of the Ruthvens actually began August 5th, 1600. The king, James VI, left the stables at the House of Falkland to shoot a deer when the master of Ruthven rode up asking a question. Well, about 7 o'clock in the morning, something odd happened. The master of Ruthven was 19 years old, lived with his brother, the Earl of Gowrie, who was 22, in the family town home in Perth, about 12 or 14 miles from Falkland. After the conversation, the king pursued the hounds, and the long and painful pursuit culminated in a kill near Falkland at about 11 o'clock. King and the master then rode to Perth, accompanied by about 15 members of the royal escort, including the Duke of Lennox and the Earl of Mar. Others from the king's company joined them, and then the total number may have been around 25. Well, we're going to talk more about this conspiracy, which had the potential to change the political fate of the world. We're going to talk more about it in our next show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.